And welcome, everybody, to Midday. It's Midday at the Movies. I'm Tom Hall. Very glad you're with us on this Friday afternoon. We call it sometimes the monthly Midday Movie Mayhem. And as always, we are joined on the first Friday of the month by our good friends Jed Dietz and Anne Hornaday. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon. Sir.
Jed Dietz, of course, the founder, the director, the producer, the writer, the actor, the second gaffer and caterer of the Maryland Film Festival. Anne Hornaday, the chief film critic of the Washington Post, and together they are the Brangelina of cinematic scholarship. You guys are like Brangelina without the bad marriage.
Aww,
I think that's very good.
That's so
very good.
Nice.
And of course, your secret is quite easy. I mean, you married.
We're not married. Never go to bed angry.
That's right. Huh? And of course, this looks like Mr. Pitt and Miss Jolie are going to have the same solution to their dilemma too. Pretty soon, they'll be married to somebody else. But we are here talking about movies today, and we would love to have you join us talking about them as well. Our number 410-662-8780, our email midday@wipr.org, and our Twitter handle @MiddayTomHall. We'd like to hear in particular from you about your favorite holiday movies. We're in December now, and there's it's 60 degrees outside. It was yesterday, at least today is in the 40s. But we'd love to hear about your favorite holiday movies. And particularly, we want to hear about a genre of movie that, Anne, you coined in a conversation we had a few days ago, comfort movies.
Aww.
I think that's kind of nice. Oh,
we all need them.
Little rabbits, little kittens. Yeah. But I hadn't really thought about that, but there are movies that sort of have the same effect as a meatloaf dinner.
Oh, yeah. They're soothing and they're reassuring. And it's a delicate balance because what I'm not talking about are those sort of saccharine, sticky, sentimental, cloying things, which can happen. But I think we all have our lists of those movies we turn to in times of trouble for solace and reassurance. And luckily, after this fractious political season and year, there are actually a few around and coming up that I would put in that category.
Yeah.
Actually, kind of an extraordinary number when you really jot them all down.
Yeah, one of the ones is the one that Jed, you and I ended up being in the same theater to see, which is called The Eagle Huntress.
Yep.
Boy, I love this movie.
Mm.
It's a documentary. It takes place in Kazakhstan with two Kazakh family who I guess are near the Mongolian border or something.
Right.
And it's about a dad. It's a daddy-daughter movie. It's about a father who teaches his young daughter, she's 13 years old, to be an eagle huntress. I mean, this is really the story itself, Jed, is extraordinary.
Yeah, it's amazing. This is very unusual. This is the province of men. And his daughter loves animals, particularly fascinated by her dad's great success with eagles. So she's grown up with an eagle trainer and hunter. And he totally supports this, and everything about it is extraordinary. I mean, these birds are incredible. The process of getting them and training them is incredible. The father-daughter relationship is incredible. It's beautiful. You can't say enough about the movie.
Yeah, let's do a little clip. Here's The Eagle Huntress.
For over 1,000 years, the nomads of the Altai Mountains have hunted with golden eagles. Precious skill that has traditionally been handed down from father to son. But now a young girl is setting out to become a master eagle hunter. Meet Ashulpan. She's 13 years old. She's strong. She's brave. And she's a total natural. But when the competition ends, the real test begins.
It's really quite something. She enters this competition, and she, she has to. And throughout the movie, you hear from the sort of elders, men, male elders, who are very opposed to this notion that a little girl, Ashulpan, who you just fall in love with immediately, she's just amazing. But What are the things that make this movie so compelling? I mean, is it the look of this movie? Because obviously you're in these incredible landscapes, you know, snowscapes and mountains and stuff. Is it the way they put it together? Is it the fact that they took such a big risk? I mean, they just started following this kid and it could have worked out a lot differently.
Well, the filmmakers heard about Ashiel Pan, I believe, when she was profiled in National Geographic. Mm-hmm. And it was a first-time filmmaker, whose name, I'm so sorry, escapes me at the moment. Really nifty guy. I met them, by the way, Ashiel Pan, her father, and the filmmakers were at the Middleburg Festival, and it was just enchanting to watch her. Otto Bell, exactly, Mr. Otto Bell. But it was an audience just full of young girls. You know, it was a lot of Girl Scout troops and local. It was just wonderful to watch that dynamic. But Otto and his team, small, tiny team of filmmakers, by the way, land in Mongolia. And literally the day that they got there was the day that Ashiel Pan captured her little baby eagle to train. And what happens is that they capture an eagle when it's young, train it and keep it for 7 years and then release it back into the wild. That is the ritual. And so they were thrown into the, you know, it's like, here, we're going to climb this mountain and get this eagle out of a nest as the mother eagle is circling. And they nailed it. I mean, they got the footage. It's extraordinary footage. They used a GoPro. They used, I think, a small drone. Mm-hmm. The cinematographer kind of invented his own little crane, his portable crane. So this, you're right, the scenery and the cinematography really are extraordinary. I mean, that has a lot to do with it. But it's really her. I mean, it's just finding this character who, like you said, you're just immediately in love with. She's just so engaging and bright. And I just, that's just luck. I mean, you know, you don't know that that's going to happen, I think, when you go into something like this.
For sure you don't, yeah.
I mean, it kind of reminded me, not the movies are very different, but the Anthony Weiner documentary. I mean, when they started with
that you don't
following
know
Weiner, you know, they had no idea how
that's
that
true.
Whole thing was going to end
exactly
out.
You're exactly right about
and
that.
And so, you know,
yeah.
And so it really is. I mean, that movie could have just been a much less, you know, jarring movie if Weiner had, you know, maybe become the mayor of New York or something. I mean, you know, but of course, what happens to him? But, you know, but here they are. They're in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
I mean, a beautiful middle of nowhere.
Yes.
But, I mean, anything could have happened here.
Exactly. Or anything couldn't have happened.
Happened.
I mean, that would have been worse
been
if just it had. Yes. Right. So, I guess the it's like everything in life. You got to show up, you know.
Yeah. And that narration, the clip you just used, Daisy Ridley, you know, who's the star of the last Star Wars movie, is the narrator of the film.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about another one. And by the way, I left the movie thinking this is the Eagle Hunters we're talking about. It was an incredible movie, and I felt unbelievably inequate as a father.
Good.
I remember you saying that.
It was the first thing I said to you and Julia when we walked out of the theater. And our daughter was with us. You know, I said, oh, my God. And she's 28 years old.
Well, she didn't agree. You'll be happy.
Well, I am delighted to note that. But I thought, oh, my gosh.
I
played
Eagle
catch
hunting.
With her a few times, but didn't do the Eagle Hunter.
Didn't, Tom.
Never
it's
taught her to play
noted.
Golf because you know, I don't know how to play golf. Mm-hmm. So, let's talk about another one. And this is the Amy Adams movie with Jeremy Renner and Forrest Whitaker, who I think still has the record for being in every movie ever made, which is really good.
Thank goodness.
He's a busy guy, but you know, that's a Trivial Pursuit question. Name two movies Forrest Whitaker has not been
in.
And it's called Arrival. Mm-hmm. We have a clip from that too. Let's listen to a little bit of Arrival.
This is the day they arrived.
The object touched down 40 minutes ago.
Mama, it's going to happen.
I don't know.
Dr. Banks, you're at the top of everyone's list when it comes to translations. You hear any words?
Am I the only one having trouble saying aliens?
So what do they look like?
You'll see soon enough.
They need to see me.
Dr. Banks?
Now that's a proper introduction.
More objects have landed around the world.
It's their language.
Got 21 hours before they start global war.
They're not our enemy.
We need to talk to them.
It's more complicated than that.
How is it more complicated?
Are you dreaming in their language?
Amy Adams is a linguist, Jed, engaged by the United States military to figure out how to communicate with aliens. So it's kind of like the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, the Washington Post, trying to figure out how to talk to the Trump campaign. It's great. You know, they're trying to figure out the new language.
Wah,
you know,
wah,
it's a very new language. But this actually goes under the the rubric of comfort movie?
I think it definitely
does. That's surprising to me.
Yeah.
It sounds like a bunch of aliens in spaceships.
Yeah. Well, it is. And it has that scope, beautifully shot, by the way, by a wonderful cinematographer named Bradford Young. But the new element here is that this linguist, who's based on a real woman in Montreal, is hired to figure out what's going on. These alien pods have appeared in 12 different places around the world, and the question is, are they here to do us ill or good? And unlike the ending of Close Encounters of the Third Kind, where François Truffaut very quickly comes up with a tonal communication, this sort of leads you through the process that a highly professional linguist would go through to try to figure out how another culture communicates when language isn't even written. And it's actually a fascinating process, and it's totally comfort, because that process of trying to communicate with each other seems, as you pointed out, really relevant right now.
Yeah, yeah. So.
And it's very, the tone of it, it's not bombastic. It's been directed by this guy named Denis Villeneuve, who did Sicario last year, which I'm sure a lot of our listeners saw and admired. Yeah. And he did a movie called Prisoners. He's a very fluent filmmaker. I mean, he really understands the medium, and he just knows how to put a movie together. This movie has a lot of time shifts. There are moments where you're not exactly sure where you are, what time frame you're in, because it has a lot to do with not with language and memory and how we construct our memories. And so it's gnarly. I mean, you know, it's there's a lot of content to it. There's a lot of philosophical content and a lot of emotional content, which is what I think makes it different. Like you said, that's what makes it the comfort movie, is that it's really about emotional connections rather than just spectacle and stuff that looks cool. But it does look cool, and there is spectacle, but it's just, it brings a lot more to the table than just that.
Interesting. All right.
And it's been a real great success. I mean, people have really connected to this movie, and I can see why, you know, because it's one of those films that you can really send a family to, you know, if they have young teenagers on up. It's kind of one of those few films that a lot of people can enjoy.
Yeah, well, that is nice. I mean, because there are, you know, it seems like there's fewer and fewer films that you can take little kids to.
Well, this
know,
I wouldn't
and
take
enjoy
little,
it together.
Yeah, I wouldn't take little kids to this one. But I would say, you know, I don't know. What do you think, Jed? Teenagers and up?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
All right, Arrival. That's with Amy Adams. Let's listen to one more clip of another comfort movie that's currently in theaters. This is a movie called Loving. And this is about a celebrated case of a white man marrying a black woman at a time when that was not legal.
Correct.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit about it, and then we're going to listen to a clip.
Yeah, this is about Richard and Mildred Loving, who were married in Caroline County, Virginia, in the 1950s, and then who's at which time, like you said, interracial marriage was illegal in that state, in that commonwealth. They were actually married in Washington, D.C., where they could get married, but then went back to live in their hometown where they had grown up together in this very racially, tribally mixed, ethnically mixed community, you know, that was really relatively at ease with people mixing it up and falling in love and making families together. But they decided to make theirs official, and they got in trouble for it and were literally run out of town and told that they couldn't live there as man and wife. And so, of course, their case ultimately went to the Supreme Court. This is a movie that was adapted from a documentary that came out a few years ago by Nancy Bersky that was a wonderful documentary called The Loving Story on HBO. And I think what I admire the most about this adaptation is that it's been written and directed by a guy named Jeff Nichols, who I think made a really bold choice, which is he doesn't give you the Wikipedia version of the story. He, in other words, he doesn't give us the kind of rousing, stirring Supreme Court speech at the end. You know, there aren't those moments. It's really about their marriage and about their love for one another. It's a very intimate, gentle, very quiet movie. It doesn't necessarily kind of hit all the expected beats, but that's precisely what I really loved about it, is that that not only do you see their great love for one another, and I think it's anchored by these two great performances by Joel Edgerton and Ruth Negga, but it really, in focusing so much on their love and their devotion and their healthy relationship, it shows how unhealthy and pathological and insane the forces are around them.
Let's listen to a little bit.
Richard Perry Loving, being a white person, and Mildred Jeter, being a colored person, did unlawfully cohabitate as man and wife.
Richard?
That ain't right!
I believe this is a battle that could go all the way to the Supreme Court.
We ain't hurt anybody.
The state of Virginia will argue that it is unfair to bring children of mixed race into the world.
Tell that woman to come out of here.
I'm gonna raise my family here. I don't care what they do to us.
Get Peggy inside!
Loving in theaters soon, if not now. So, Jed, this is a real triumph from what I'm told.
It is a real triumph, and as Anne said, it's a wonderful story. I wasn't as wild about Joel Edgerton's performance as Anne was, but it she's exactly right. I mean, the message and the comfort, I guess, of this movie is this: the incredible love and the importance of that, the overwhelming importance of that, of this couple, and everything else sort of falls away afterwards. And I would just say the documentary, which was made by HBO, is available on, you know, if you have HBO
and you should
definitely demand
see
stuff.
That
and,
too.
And they're
yeah.
wonderful to see together.
Absolutely.
Yeah, actually,
yeah. They, yes, good that's a very good point.
All right, we're going to take a little break. We'll come back and talk some more movies here on Midday. Our phone number, 410-662-8780. Our email address, midday@wipr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. Join us to talk to Jed Dietz of the Maryland Film Festival and Anne Hornaday, the chief film critic for The Washington Post. We're going to come back and talk to Kate from Beverly Hills. Kate, I beg your indulgence to hang on for just a little bit more, and we'll talk about her favorite holiday movie. We'd love to hear from you about your favorite holiday movie or your favorite comfort movie, whether or not it's currently in theaters. You're listening to Midday, and I'm awfully glad about that. Stick around. We'll be right back.
This is your NPR News Station, 88.1 WYPR.
And welcome back to Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up Monday on the worldwide broadcast, Viva House has been a fixture near Union Square in Baltimore for decades. Brendan Walsh and Willett Bickham have run a soup kitchen at the Catholic Worker House there for more than 50 years. They'll join me Monday to talk about their work addressing homelessness and as peace activists. That's coming up on Midday Monday. And today, if you've just joined us, it's the monthly Midday Movie Mayhem. Our cinematic scholars Anne Hornaday of The Washington Post and Jed Dietz, the director of the Maryland Film Festival, join me in Studio A. You are welcome to join us as well. We'd love to hear about your favorite holiday movies, your favorite comfort movies. Our phone number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org, and our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. Before we continue, we got an email here from Vince in Lithicum. He says, minor point, but Tom Hall made mention of comfort in celluloid, or words to that effect. Actually, Vince, what I said was finding solace in celluloid. And he says, celluloid hasn't been used in the movie industry for over 60 years. It's highly flammable and was eventually replaced with acetate. So solace in celluloid, it should be actually solace in acetate. And maybe now digital. But if I were to say solace in acetate or solace in digital, it wouldn't sound as good, Vince. So that's what I was doing. I was taking a little liberty, and you called me on it, and bully for you. That you're exactly right. I stand corrected. Before we continue, let me go to the phones. Kate in Beverly Hills. You're calling from Beverly Hills in Northeast Baltimore to talk about your favorite holiday movie. Welcome to the show, Kate.
Thanks. Yeah, I wanted to call and talk about Home for the Holidays, which is set at Thanksgiving. It's directed by Jodie Foster. It has an amazing cast, and it's set in Baltimore. And it's surprising to me that not as many people seem to know about it, but it's hilarious. You know, Charlie Chaplin's daughter is in it. She's so funny. Robert Downey Jr.
Claire Danes is a young girl.
Claire Danes is a young girl. Anne Bancroft, yep. Charles Durning. And so I find it's hilarious. It's so funny, but there's also, you know, so much discord between family members. And then it ends with a beautiful kind of note that, you know, the best times in our life are the ones maybe that were not captured on film. So I just wanted to hear Anne and Jed's thoughts on it and, you know, whether they they love it.
Well, that's a great suggestion. You know, I remember hearing of that movie, but I don't think I ever saw it. But thank you for that call, Kate. That's terrific. So, Home for the Holidays. Jodie Foster is such a talented
woman. She really is.
She is.
And I agree. You know, there's there are certain moments from that film that I still think about. One of them, the chief one being this scene early on when Holly Hunter is arriving home to visit her adult, you know, this adult child coming home for the holidays. And she's in the back seat of the car coming back from the airport. And she looks over and there's another guy around her age in the same position. And they just give each other this look like, can you believe it? Because, of course, you regress immediately. And
right.
Kate's completely right. It captures all of those crazy nuances of being an adult child in a kind of a dysfunctional environment. And what I also like is that it's one of those rare Thanksgiving movies. I mean, we talk about Christmas movies, but when you think about, you know, every year I'm trying to, people say, like, what's a good Thanksgiving movie? And I have to name Home for the Holidays, Hannah and Her Sisters. I would put The Last Waltz in there but, you know, Thanksgiving movies are pretty rare. So I give it credit for that, too.
Do you have movies, Jed, that you watch like every Christmas time? Do you repeat?
No.
You don't do it because
no.
You're just so busy watching all the new ones. You don't watch the old ones, right? Is that what happens?
Yeah, I pretty much watch old movies, but not specifically just Christmas
for the holidays.
Movies.
We have a movie star, speaking of movies, calling into the program now, and this is what happens when I hang out with Dietz and Hornady. I mean, the movie stars and the paparazzi just, you know, flock around them. But Ken in Ellicott City, speaking of loving, you know this film quite intimately. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Tom. And I think Jed and Ann will both tell you I'm not a movie star, but I did...
You are too, Ken. I know. You are.
Well, thank you, Ann.
You're the man.
That's very generous of you. Yeah, I played photo double for Supreme Court Justice William J. Brennan, Jr., but as you say, it was not a court drama. It was a love story. So we got blurred out in the background. Please don't look for me because you'll go crazy.
So you were a stand-in? You were a double for Justice Brennan?
Yeah, a photo double. They looked for extras who actually looked like the Supreme Court justices. And they only used six of us because we're kind of blurred out in the background. They didn't need a full court. But it was a lot of fun. We filmed down in Richmond, and I saw the preview for local cast and crew down in Richmond a couple of weeks ago. So I agree with you. It's a wonderful film. Mm-hmm. And I also I want to comment on Jed's comment about Joel Edgerton, because I think both Ruth Negga and Joel Edgerton did a remarkable job. But what was remarkable about Joel Edgerton was he was sometimes faced with almost life and death situations and said nothing. And that's an extraordinary challenge to an actor. And I just drilled in on his face and thought, oh, what is going on in this man's mind, you know? He's just been told he's going to have to be separated from his wife and he doesn't say anything. What is going on? I just felt a tremendous amount of turmoil and class and race distinction kind of swirling around his head. And he just sat there. He didn't even boil. It just was all inside him.
I picked up on those same notes, Ken. It's a very interior performance, very stoic, and very much of its time, you know, in terms of a certain definition of manhood and what it means to be a man. And yeah, it resonated for me on those levels, too.
Oh, that's great. Well, thanks for your call, Ken, and I look forward to seeing the movie, and I promise I won't try to find you.
And good luck in the Oscar hunt.
Yeah. Absolutely. You're my vote, Ken, because you're the only movie star I've ever met. Mike in Hamden, welcome to Midday with Jed Dietz and Ann Hornaday.
Hi. I was going to make a comment on Loving as well. I grew up in the Washington area, and... pretty much as soon as the ACLU really got its teeth into that story, into the Loving's story, the Washington Post picked it up, and you know they followed it very closely because you know the Washington Post was getting after Virginia for its racial restrictive policies for years and years and years, and this was a big target. In fact, even the conservative Evening Star got behind the case. So it was interesting. Although while I was watching the film, I was saying, "Wait a minute, I don't see any Washington D.C. neighborhoods there." And then I found out it was filmed in Richmond.
Yeah. Although there is that wonderful, one of the best shots in the film is actually a shot that Jeff got, and I don't know if it's a composite shot or if he got it in D.C., but it's of the Lovings No, it's he told me he did shoot it in D.C. It's of their of the neighborhood where they lived, where very unhappily. I mean, she was just miserable in Washington. She all she wants to do is go home. And there's a shot of the Capitol in the background, mm-hmm. and it's just this kind of eloquent kind of presage of what's to come. And he said that he actually that that's exactly her the same neighborhood. I mean, it was literally where she did live, and it just happened to be within view of that Capitol dome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, great. Well, thank you for your call, Mike. A couple other comfort movies that are currently in theaters that I'd like to mention before we run out of time completely here, because I know we're going to have a bunch of folks calling and emailing. There's a new, I guess it's a musical, right? La La Land.
Oh, it's just so amazing.
With Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone,
yep.
Directed by Damien Chazelle. And it's about Ryan Gosling plays a pianist, right? He's a
jazz musician.
Jazz pianist. I saw the trailer for this. It looked fascinating. And it's a musical. It's like it really is a musical, right?
It is a total musical. It opens in the great tradition of Astaire and Ginger Rogers and Gene Kelly and the references to those movies in this one, all over Los Angeles. I think 48 locations in Los Angeles celebrating the vision and beauty of Los Angeles. The opening sequence is a traffic jam on the 105 and the 110 intersection, and you'll break out laughing. You can't believe how they filmed it. It's the whole movie is just a charming. This is a movie in which the couple, in one of the most romantic notions, actually flies as they're dancing, and you will totally go with them on this. It's just, I haven't seen anything like this in a long time. This guy did Whiplash, a completely different kind of, also very music based, but a completely different kind of movie. This one is run. Don't wait to go see this movie.
Yeah, terrific. You know? All right, so that's opening a week from. It's 2 weeks from tonight.
Yeah,
and at the Charles Theater in Baltimore here, at least. So, Anne, you've seen it? You like
it? Oh, I just loved it. Yes. I mean, Jed's right. It's utterly enchanting from literally the first moment of that huge production number. So bright, so sprightly, so imaginative. And I will say, I don't want to give anything away, but, you know, bring your Kleenex.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, it's a feel-good movie because you feel good about movies. You know, you feel good about the medium. But there's a little heartbreak, you know. It's not just, you know, rainbows and unicorns, but it's just been so lovingly made and conceived. And I kind of feel that it's Chazelle making his stand for celluloid, you know, Vince.
Yeah.
celluloid does live, you know. I mean, it's really a kind of a defense of those classical values in filmmaking that we sometimes feel might be threatened. And it's just a really exhilarating experience.
But this illustrates in your point is just right that the great comfort movies are not furry kittens
exactly.
sitting on the sofa things
yeah.
or being cute. They're about human stories
yes.
and there's triumph and disappointment and all of that's in this movie.
How about when kittens play the piano on YouTube?
Well, that's
we talk
know.
About this almost every month. And those provide me great comfort.
Yep, and they belong
great
on
comfort.
YouTube.
No shame.
They do
that's
belong
right.
on YouTube. Mm-hmm. That's
no
right.
shame in that game.
So talking about no shame in that game. Indeed, we're talking about favorite comfort movies, favorite holiday movies. Dennis writes in since childhood, and I'm now over 70. In childhood, parts of it frightened me, and now it makes me cry. I've loved all of the iterations of A Christmas Carol,
yeah.
even the musical version of the 80s. My favorite version, though, is the British rendering starring Alistair Sims. I believe it's most faithful to the novelette, and the characterizations are wonderful, especially Sims's. So thank you, Dennis. And that, you know, Christmas Carol, it's a good
course.
Story.
But you know,
you start with a script, you know?
That's yep. right. And
yes,
I'm so glad you mentioned that because it kind of gets overlooked as maybe being too obvious, but yeah. I agree. And I haven't seen the Alistair Sims version in a while.
I haven't seen the musical of it. There's a musical of that I didn't realize. But he says from the 80s.
A movie musical. That does stop
yeah.
me.
He seems to be an aficionado.
There was kind of a not great Jim Carrey version a few years ago.
Yeah, well, that happens. You
we're
know.
Gonna move right
Liz has written in saying that her favorite Christmas movie is Christmas in Connecticut. Barbara Stanwyck is incredible, writes Liz. It's hilarious and absolutely a classic. Our extended family watches it together every
nice.
Year.
Great choice,
Let's go to
Liz.
The phones to Frank in Aberdeen. Frank, I understand you've got a favorite holiday flick to recommend.
Yes. Hello?
Hi, welcome to the show, Frank. You're on the air. What would you like to talk about for your favorite holiday movie?
It's a Wonderful Life.
There you go.
And we are now entering Potterville.
Oh.
And Clarence isn't here to save us anymore.
Oh, Frank.
Well, you know, it's interesting. And you wrote a piece. Thank you for that suggestion, Frank. And, of course, I'm sure that's a suggestion that's shared by many. You wrote a piece in the Post a week or two ago mm-hmm. about cynicism mm-hmm. in movies and movies like even Arrival mm-hmm. that are viewed differently after the election mm-hmm. in this election season than would have been viewed either before the election or if the mm-hmm. election had had a different result.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, what happened was, another Christmas movie, a lot of people's favorite Christmas movie was a movie called Bad Santa that came out of several years ago with Billy Bob Thornton.
And now they have a sequel.
And I went to the screening of that and I was just so struck. I mean, that's a cynical movie. It's meant to be cynical. It's meant to kind of, it's sarcastic. It's vulgar. It's nasty. And it's sort of, it's meant to kind of subvert all of that cheap sentimentality that we can fall prey to at the season. And I think it was seen as transgressive and subversive when it first came out. But the sequel
is genuinely funny.
Yeah. This one is just so nasty. It just doubles down on the profanity and the abuse. And so many of the lines of dialogue echoed what we heard, I'm sorry to say, President-elect Trump say during the election. I mean, it was just the nastiness toward people, making fun of people with disabilities, making fun of women, kind of being predatory and icky toward women. And it was just, it's not funny now. I mean, not that it ever really was.
How did it do at the box office, Jed? Do you have any idea?
No, it hasn't. It's done very badly. Mm-hmm. But I think the point's really good. I think movies often reflect something going on in the culture. And they're obviously made way in advance of what that thing is. In Arrival, nobody knew we'd have such a fractious election season when they didn't set out
to make a healing movie after a difficult
or La La Land. I mean, nobody mm-hmm. knew. And I would say Arthur, which came out during the Reagan administration, was like a perfect expression of a whole new ethos that was, coming into the culture. And that just happens in movies. And it's a very fascinating thing.
Yeah, I was talking to Judy Russick about this yesterday. I think that theater is often at the forefront of, sort of tapping into the zeitgeist.
Sure.
And tapping into what's on people's minds. And, it'll be interesting to see the kind of theater that we see, the kind of movie making
Definitely.
That we see in the age of Donald Trump.
I think you're right. But I think my point about in the essay I wrote is that it's that, obviously cynicism is a part of cinematic grammar and it's never going to go away. But I think now more than ever, it really needs to be smart. And empty, facile cynicism is what I was writing about, that mm-hmm. kind of easy, glib, everything stinks and they're all corrupt. And it's like, no. We have to be incisive. We have to be accurate, surgically accurate now in terms of how we prescribe what's going on in the society and what we propose to do about it.
Yeah,
it's not enough to be nasty.
You wrote in the Post, Anne, after September 11th, 2001, some observers were moved to pronounce the end of irony. Now it feels as if cynicism is having its own moment of reckoning, having so thoroughly saturated politics and the culture at large that it no longer registers as anything other than same old, same old. Yeah, and I think that's a point well taken.
Mm-hmm.
Let's try to grab one more telephone call before we take a break. Kathy in Annapolis, welcome to Midday with Jed Dietz and Anne Hornaday. What's your favorite
Hi.
Comfort film or your favorite Christmas movie?
Actually, my favorite comfort film is a film I saw on HBO, Lost Christmas with Eddie Izzard. I don't know if any of you have seen it.
Never.
Lost Christmas.
This is new.
Eddie Izzard. Uh-huh. What's it about?
Oh, it is like a gritty British inner city movie. This guy, Eddie Izzard, wakes up and he's kind of like a bum. And he doesn't know how he got there, and he starts wandering around the projects and encounters these people, and you think, wow, this is going to be depressing. And yet, you don't know where the movie's going. You have to keep following it. There's a little boy. He's lost his dog. There's an old Indian woman who's a lonely widow. He encounters these people, and somehow it gets a little metaphysical. At the end of the movie, the story all comes around, and it has a really uplifting ending. And now, at the end, you see how all the pieces fit together.
Interesting.
Wow. Okay.
Well, Kathy, thank you for the call.
That's
thank you for
great.
That suggestion. You've stumped the panel here. None of
Indeed.
Us have heard of it, so that's
it.
Great.
So
Lost Christmas, Eddie Izzard. It was at least at one point on HBO. We are going to be back after a quick break with Jed Dietz and Anne Hornaday for the Midday Movie Mayhem. Again, what have you seen that you've really liked recently? What's your favorite holiday movie? What's your favorite comfort movie? You can give us a call, 410-662-8780. You can send us an email, midday@wipr.org, or drop us a tweet, @MiddayTomHall. Stick around. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Midday here on your NPR News Station, 88.1 WYPR.
And welcome back to the Midday Movie Mayhem. I'm Tom Hall. Glad you're with us. We're here in studio with Jed Dietz, the director of the Maryland Film Festival, and Anne Hornaday, the chief film critic for The Washington Post. You can join us anytime, 410-662-8780. You can send us an email, midday@wipr.org, or drop us a tweet. Our handle is @MiddayTomHall. Desiree dropped us a tweet, and she suggests Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, the underdog Thanksgiving movie, and National Lampoon's Christmas.
All right.
Well, there you go. Well, thank you, Desiree. I appreciate that. That's great. And Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, is that...
John Candy.
John Candy, right? Of blessed memory. It's not Steve Martin, is it?
Uh-oh.
Is it Martin Short something?
Ooh,
I'm blanking.
No, it wasn't Martin Short. Okay. Ooh, sorry.
Yeah. All right. So we'll figure that out eventually, but who's in that? But that's a good suggestion. Got a couple of other emails to let you know about. Frank and Jenny from Westminster say that the little independent film Pieces of April, a favorite Thanksgiving movie.
Oh, that's a Thanksgiving movie. Well done.
Funny and poignant. Every problem
Katie
you could
Holmes.
Have making the dinner and Trisha with Clarkson. Family all resolved one way or the other. So that's good. That's
good
a good Thanksgiving movie. And the other one, they say, as for the best comfort film, here's a quote. See if I can, I'll give you a dramatic reading and you see if you can name that film, right? When you find the person you want to spend the rest of your life with, you want to start the rest of your life as soon as possible. When Harry Met Sally.
That's
a lovely line. Yeah. Did Rob Reiner write that movie? Who wrote
Nora
that?
Nora Ephron.
Nora Ephron.
Great
God
Nora
bless
Ephron.
Her. All right,
no
so that's a great suggestion,
wow.
Frank and Jenny. We have a hater. You have a hater.
Good.
Brian's a hater. And Brian, I'm delighted to have you here. But in your email, you say, can we just agree that love actually is actually terrible?
Yes.
Despite its status as a great holiday movie and so many circles. Well, Brian, I stand in defense of Love Actually. I cry every time.
Me too.
I'm with Brian.
So, yeah.
I'm with Brian.
Two to two.
We're going
to
have a standoff.
And
Brian, run down. Hurry. I need you.
Okay, and that's vaguely set at Christmas time, isn't it?
It is, yes.
I don't actually remember
considered.
Much about the movie, but I mean, I do remember one scene where he's standing outside of the door and it's snowing and it's at the end of the movie and she's married and he's in love with her and all that stuff, right? Isn't that in Love Actually?
Yeah, it's been a while. I mean, honestly, I was so not fond of it. I've never gone back and rewatched it, but it has attained, as Brian says, it's really become this kind of beloved holiday. It has gotten that classic holiday. And I'm with you, Brian. We're going to bring it down. Bringing it down.
Not me, but Jed, you're a sucker for that movie, too?
Yeah, I love
good
it.
For you.
It's really good.
All right, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, John Candy, Steve Martin.
Oh, okay.
So I guessed right on that. Yeah. And directed by John Hughes.
Oh, of course.
Yep. There you go. So that's good. Phil in North Baltimore, welcome to Midday. What's your favorite comfort movie?
Oh, good afternoon. Yes, my favorite comfort movie is the 1981 British-made film, Chariots of Fire. Music and great story. And I was a runner for 18 years. Yeah. Plus, I've been to Britain 6 times. Plus, I've been to several Olympics in my life. So, a combination of all those reasons.
Yeah, so it really resonates with you, doesn't it? That's terrific. Yeah.
Yes, it really does. I've seen it about 100 times in my life.
It's a great
good
movie.
Good for you. Chariots really of Fire. Movie. Excellent, excellent suggestion as a comfort movie. Steve in Seton Hill. What's your favorite Christmas movie?
Well, I'd like to recommend the greatest version of A Christmas Carol from 1951, made in Britain, starring the great actor Alastair Sim. It was originally released under the title of Scrooge. And what's so great about it is it's actually very dark until, of course, you know, the latter quarter. And that's the way that Dickens wrote it. And the way that it's shot is visually very dark, and it really suggests, you know, the whole atmosphere of the word Dickensian.
Yeah.
And there are some extra scenes added that were not in the original story, but they really add a lot to it because it shows the change in social attitudes in England as the Industrial Revolution was really picking up steam, so to speak, and how money, rather like some people we could talk about today, how money and success is everything, but only, you know, not to everyone. And it's just an absolutely outstanding movie. In fact, Leonard Maltin's Classic Movie Guide points out that it's really too good to be shown just at Christmas.
Yeah.
And it's one of my favorite movies, Christmas or otherwise.
Yeah, and so now the title is Christmas Carol, if people are looking
yeah,
it up.
Yeah, it's
so it's 1951.
If you go by the DVD, it's mm-hmm. it's under the title of Christmas Carol.
And that's the one our earlier emailer had highlighted, too. Yeah, same one.
All right, Cross in Dundalk. Welcome to the Midday Movie Mayhem with Jed Dietz and Ann Hornaday. What do you like to watch at this time of year?
I like to watch the Hallmark Channel. It is so hokey. just when you think that smarminess was at an end, the one film turns off and another equally smarmy one comes on. And it has apparently become so popular that they aired a week and a half of Christmas films over July.
Did they really? Oh, that's fantastic. You know, my mom, who lives in Atlanta and listens to this program semi-religiously, is also a big fan. She's told me the last couple of weeks she's had nothing but the Hallmark Channel on all day, and she's just one movie after another, after another, after another, and she just loves it. So good for you, Cross.
They're like the Christmas sweaters of movies.
Right,
you know?
Right. What are those? The fruitcakes that people
yeah.
get? Yeah, that's great. Well, that's a good suggestion, Cross, for people who are looking for swarm Christmas, you
sure.
know, and who among us doesn't want a little bit of swarm in our Christmas, exactly. Mm-hmm. Bob in Baltimore, welcome to Midday.
Hey, thanks.
So what's on your mind? What's your favorite Christmas movie?
Christmas Story.
The Christmas Story, uh-huh.
Yep. The HBO does 24 hours of it, and I watch it as much as I can.
Really? HBO does it 24 hours in a row or something like
yep.
that?
Yep. They start Christmas Eve, and they run it through for like 24 hours. They just run it over and over again. And...
wow. So who's in that one?
Oh, gosh, I don't remember. It's the one where he hits the little Red Ryder BB gun and you shoot his eye out.
Right. There's a musical version of that actually coming to the Hippodrome Theater
it's
at the end
Gene
of this
Shepherd
month.
Story.
Yeah, it's
yeah.
Gene Shepherd.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Right. There's a whole
I just
musical.
Think it's the funniest movie. And actually, somebody gave me a pajamas that have Christmas Story all over it. So that's my favorite thing.
That's great.
That's great.
I didn't know HBO did that. That's really sweet.
Good. Good for them. Here's Kathleen writing in an email who suggests The Man Who Came to Dinner
Yay, Kathleen!
With Monty Woolley and Betty Davis.
That's
it's
mine.
Funny and has wonderful characters and witty dialogue.
That's
and
mine
that's, in
one.
Fact,
yes.
the chief critic of the Washington Post's favorite holiday movie, too.
That's ding, 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 ding. We have
right.
a winner.
So we've got some, we've
oh,
got
it's
some
so
classy
wonderful.
Folks in our
You know, we just missed it. It showed last night on TCM. I wish I could have said you can watch. But I think if you have, don't they have streaming or something?
They
Go to TCM.com and see if you can see it.
All right,
because it's really worth it. And they'll probably replay it between
It's like
now
from
and
the
Christmas.
40s or something?
42, yes. Yep. And it was written by, it's taken from a George S. Kaufman and Moss Hart play. But it was written by the guys who wrote Casablanca, Philip and Julius Epstein. And mm-hmm. it's with Monty Woolley and Betty Davis. And it's just, it's a screwball comedy. It's absolutely just stingingly funny. The dialogue is hilarious. And mm-hmm. the action is really funny, too. Mm-hmm. And penguins.
Uh-huh, penguins.
I'm just going
to
say.
Next to kittens playing the piano.
And penguins.
I'm all over penguins. So. I got to tell you, they're number two on my
totally.
List. Totally.
Underrated.
We have another vote for Alistair Sim in A Christmas Carol. This comes from Michael, who sends an email and says, of all the Scrooges, no actor has been able to match the great facial expressions of Alistair Sim. When he gets the spirit of Christmas, he really gets it. So, Alistair Sim is
so
having
great.
A good
I'm
day
so happy
today.
This
yeah.
movie's getting the love that it
So now, Jed Dietz, do you in fact have a favorite holiday movie? I mean, I've declared Love Actually. Anne has swatted me down along with Brian. Anne has her pick.
I backed you up, though. I
yeah,
had
you
back
did,
on that
and
one.
I appreciate that. But do you have one that you'd like to suggest
I think
independently?
In the really sort of pure Christmas spirit, I think Miracle on 34th Street.
Mm-hmm. That's a great
is
one.
It's one of my favorites, yeah.
That's a good
Very
one.
Good. Matt in Ellicott City, you have a favorite comfort movie and a favorite Christmas movie to suggest?
Hi, Matt, how are you?
I'm good. Matt, you're on the air. What's on your mind today with
show,
the movies?
Great show.
Thanks.
Yeah, really good. Well, two things, also two things about these movies. One comfort would be Field of Dreams, Kevin Costner. And then Christmas movie would be It's a Wonderful Life. But also what I say about these two movies, I dare any guy, I don't care how macho, not to cry at both of these movies. You know, Field of Dreams, of course, he says, Dad, you want to play catch? And, of course, at the end of the movie with It's a Wonderful Life, when Jimmy Stewart realizes, you know, how much he had in his life. So, yeah, huge tearjerkers for anybody.
I totally agree. Of course, I'm a bad example because I have been known to cry at reruns of Green Acres. So, you know, I mean, I am a crier at movies. I mean,
it is a very good thing.
It's nothing like sitting around and having a good weep.
But those are the movies that there's a handful of movies, and I think Heaven Can Wait is another one that men have license. It's like they're mankerchief movies. Get out your mankerchief. And it's like you have full permission. The guys have full permission to weep openly.
Duffy in Annapolis, what's your suggestion for a favorite holiday movie for our midday movie mayhem?
I just wanted to recommend the movie Scrooged, starring Bill Murray. It's a little bit of a darker comedy. I remember seeing it in the theaters when I was a child, and I can't believe my mom let me see it. But watching it later as an adult, and after watching Bill Murray have this little career renaissance, it's a great holiday movie, and it's a lot of fun for people who remember him when he was, you know, before his whole renaissance.
Yeah, that's a good. It's kind of a precursor to the Bad Santa thing, you know. It was dark before dark was, you know.
And Bill Murray is just a good actor. I mean, when you have an artist like that, you know, you can really do some things with it. I mean, it's, you know.
I'm surprised no one's mentioned Elf yet.
Will Ferrell.
Yeah, that's another one.
I've never seen Elf. Have you seen Elf?
Oh, it's funny. It's good. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's good. Yeah,
Is Elf a franchise? Are there like Elf 2 and 3 and 4 and 5
good
and
question.
6?
I don't believe so. If they have made them, I haven't seen them.
One of the movies that we've now run out of time and can't talk about is Hidden Figures.
Oh, yeah.
Which is, but Jed, just really quick, in 10 seconds, tell us what it's about because it's coming soon.
It's based on a true story of these African-American women early in NASA around the Mercury flight program who were incredible mathematicians, but they were working in a world in which both women and people of color were not thought to have mathematical skills for some unknown reason. And the cast is sensational. The story is really great. This is definitely comfort in the best.
We will start there on the first Friday in January because that's what's going to open around the 6th year. So happy holidays to you both.
And to you.
Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you.
And we'll see you soon. Ann Hornaday is the chief film critic for The Washington Post. Jed Dietz is the founder and director of the Maryland Film Festival. The festival will be moving into their new digs at the Parkway Theater next spring. We've got a link to information about the film festival and a link to Ann's reviews in the Post on our website, WIPR.org/midday. That's it for us today. Coming up Monday on Midday, the peace activists Brendan Walsh and Willa Bickham of Viva House, a Catholic worker house here in Baltimore, will talk about their work providing meals to the hungry and inspiration to generations of people in the nonviolence movement. That's coming up Monday on Midday. Midday is produced by Rob Sivak, Bridget Armstrong, who is under the weather today, feel better, and Kathleen Cahill. Austin Coghlan from Clean Cuts wrote and recorded the Midday theme music. Our director and engineer is a man for all seasons, a man of constant sorrow, a man with a plan, Luke Spicknall. Charlie Hines and Zandra Ellen provide production assistance. I appreciate everybody tuning in. We look forward to being with you next week. I'm Tom Hall. Have a great weekend.